Welcome to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. This is episode number 464, and my name's Camden Busey. I'm the pastor of Hope OPC in Grays Lake, Illinois. I'm back down at Mid-America Reformed Seminary once again, doing another series of interviews. We're in Dyer, Indiana, just across the border. So everything's cheaper here and fewer taxes, and we always enjoy it. Today I've been speaking with some good friends, and we're delighted to have with us today Reverend Mark Vanderhart. Mr. Vanderhart is Associate Professor of Old Testament Studies. He's also the Ministerial Apprenticeship Program Director. Welcome to the program, Mark. It's good to talk to you.
Good to be with you.
Always love talking, as I've been able to come down here and there throughout the semesters, but this is the first time in the program, so we're excited to have you. We also have your colleague. We have the President and Professor of Doctrinal Studies here at Mid-America, Dr. Cornelis Venema. Welcome back, Dr. Venema. It's good to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
Thanks for hanging on. After last week, we spoke about your book, By His Spirit and Word, and today we're going to continue on with an important discussion and a topic of which both of you will be familiar. We're speaking today about the Reformed Church in Latvia, or as I probably ought to say, Latvia. I don't know how to say it. I know how to say it as a Midwesterner with that really hard A. But we're going to get into this subject, speaking about history, speaking about missions, speaking also about theological education and the global church. And I know this is something near and dear to your heart, Mark, and something that you've been involved with for some time, going over to Latvia and ministering and teaching and encouraging the brothers and sisters in Christ there. Just as we begin, I'm certain that many of our listeners, especially coming from the United States, are rather ignorant in terms of world geography. And Latvia not being a big factor in terms of perhaps world athletics. We might not know exactly where the country is, but can you just remind us or teach some of us listeners where in the world is Latvia?
That's a question I hear a lot. Most people have probably heard about it.
Of course, I think.
But they have no idea where it is. And I say it's one of the Baltic countries. And frequently I get a blank stare still. And they may say something like, oh, like near Serbia? I say, no, that's Balkan. This is a Baltic country. Yeah. Do you know where Poland is? Well, most Americans know where Poland is. Mm-hmm. Go to the northeast corner. Right across the border to the northeast is Lithuania. North of that is Latvia. Mm-hmm. And Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia are the three Baltic countries. Mm-hmm. Or if you prefer, go over to Stockholm, Sweden. Go across the Baltic Sea to the southeast, and you'll come to Riga, Latvia. So it's very much in the northern part of Eastern Europe.
And Riga, is that a port city? That is the capital city of Latvia.
Riga is an ancient city. It's 800 years old. It was founded in 1201. Mm-hmm. So about 15 years ago, it celebrated its 800th anniversary as a city. It is the capital city, and it is a port city. In the Soviet era, it was also the site of a Soviet naval base.
Mm. It's interesting that you mentioned Estonia and Lithuania, those three as the Baltic states. And from in my very brief research yesterday, see that perhaps the people groups and the cultural tradition maybe of the people in Latvia has a little bit more in common with Estonia than Lithuania. Or do I have that backwards?
You have that backwards.
I have that backwards because the Estonians are the Finnic people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, from Finland. That makes more sense. See, I told you. Just brief enough to get dangerous, but also to get my facts wrong. Nevertheless, the three are quite related there. But there's also a little bit of an enclave that borders Latvia as well, that is a part of Russia. I think Kaliningrad or something.
That borders sort? Lithuania.
Yeah, Lithuania. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting situation where they retain allegiance and they're a state of Russia, but yet mm-hmm. don't border any other parts of Russia. I guess kind of like our Alaska.
Something like that, yeah. Or East Prussia in the time of Hitler.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Precisely. What's the general history of the people of Latvia? You've spoken about Riga celebrating its 800th anniversary. Just in broad strokes, well, how have the people come to develop, and where did the country come from?
The Baltic people are a kind of a tribe to themselves. They are not Nordic. They are not Slavic. They are not Teutonic. They are Baltic. And historically, the Latvian people, Estonians as well, have been ruled by their neighbors. If not the Lithuanians and the Poles, then it was the Swedes. And then after 1710, it was the Russians. And the Baltic countries were absorbed into the Russian Empire and were part of the Russian Empire for the next two centuries. When World War I was ending and Russia having lost and was basically falling into civil war, the three Baltic countries saw their opportunity to break free and to declare their independence, which Latvia did in November of 1918. It retained that independence until in the aftermath of the Nazi Germany, Soviet Union secret treaty, but there were secret protocols in August of 1939. Hitler wanted to take Poland, and Joseph Stalin wanted to settle, quote, the Baltic question, even though the Soviet Union had signed peace treaties with all three Baltic countries and Finland, promising their independence forever. But in June of 1940, Soviet tanks and troops crossed the border and occupied the three Baltic countries.
What's the religious composition of Latvia and history?
Christianity came late to the Latvians, not quite as late with the Lithuanians, but Christianity basically came in the 12th and 13th centuries, quite late. They were resistant to Christianity. So the Germans and other Christian nations forcefully conquered them and brought them into the Christian church. Then German Lutherans came in the 16th century and brought Lutheranism. So historically, the Latvians and the Estonians have been Lutherans, although the eastern part of Latvia, the Latgalians, tend to be more Roman Catholic, being more influenced by their Roman Catholic neighbors to the south in Lithuania. Russians have historically been Russian Orthodox. And the largest Russian Orthodox cathedral outside of Russia is in Riga, Latvia. It's a beautiful, beautiful church.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. They always typically are, the Orthodox churches especially. How were you specifically introduced to Latvia?
The introduction to that came through Dr. George van Groningen, Christian Reformed pastor who taught for many years in Jackson, Mississippi at Reformed Theological Seminary, later on in Covenant Seminary in St. Louis. And he was approached by a pastor in Riga, pastor by the name of Elvis Sauka. Yes, Elvis lives in Riga. Who heard Dr. van Groningen, if I got the story right, at a conference and walked up to him and said, you must come to Riga to help us start a Reformed seminary.
Yeah.
Dr. van Groningen is a man of big vision and unstoppable work ethic. And he went there in, I think it was November of sometime in 1998. He lectured on biblical theology to Latvian students and to Russian students, separate classes, different languages, different temperaments.
Because the Latvians have an enduring Baltic language, right? Just as the Lithuanians do too, right?
Yeah. In 1991, when Latvia broke free from the Soviet Union, it declared its national language to be Latvian.
And about 2 million people that speak this language?
The population of Latvia is about 2 million now. Its population is slowly decreasing. The birth rate is low. And many Latvians have moved to other EU countries for work. A little over 25% of the population is ethnically Russian. Many of them are not citizens, though they were born there, because it is a requirement that you must know Latvian to be a citizen.
Really?
And many Russians in the Soviet era never bothered to learn Latvian.
Wow.
Now, the Latvians know Russian, but many Russians don't know Latvian. So there is still to this day some lingering tensions in the background between the populations.
Certainly. How similar is it to Lithuanian?
Latvian is very close to Lithuanian. They are cousin languages, but that's it.
That's it. The closest vocabulary. And it's not like the relationship between Ukrainian and Russian.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
East Prussian was also a Baltic language, but it vanished in the 17th century. And the closest language after that is Sanskrit in India. But my involvement, Dr. Van Groningen lectured on biblical theology, and he came back to the States and he called me. We knew each other through family ties, and I actually had him as a professor at Dort College in the early 70s. And he called me and said, "Mark, you must go in November 98 to teach." Mm-hmm. And teachers in the early days would go for 1, maybe 2 weeks, modules. You lecture every night for 3 hours, 10 times.
In the church? Or what? In what context at this point?
At this point, they simply rented facilities.
Yeah, okay.
They had no. They did not have their own church. The Reformed Church actually sort of reemerged from the shadows because the Soviet era. Well, let me back up. The Germans are the ones who brought the Reformed faith to the Latvian people in the 1700s. But when Hitler called the Baltic Germans to come back to the fatherland, to Germany, that weakened the Reformed churches of Riga and Latvia. And then when the Soviet era came in, that just crushed the church. The Reformed Church died in the 1940s and 50s. And only revived through a strange providence of God in the 1990s when a Lutheran pastor by the name of Alvis Sauka started reading. Well, he became a believer. He had been a pastor, but he was not a believer. And he started to read Reformed literature and became convinced of the Reformed faith. He led his congregation out of the Lutheran church, but in the European setup, you have to be registered with the government.
Yeah, right.
So the government said, "Well, what are you? Are you Catholic? No. Are you Lutheran? No. Are you Baptist? No. What are you?" One category left was Reformed. He said, "We're Reformed." And yes, a strange providence of God. And so Dr. Van Groningen came with the interest of starting some kind of a seminary among people who had the name Reform but didn't know what that really meant.
He just checked the box.
Yeah. And he said, "You must go and teach." I said, "I cannot." One does not say no to Dr. Van Groningen.
Persistent.
Very persistent. Yeah. A great man. In fact, the Latvians consider him almost a saint.
Yeah.
Because he nurtured them in the early days of their work. And finally, I persuaded him that I could not go in November 98. Then he said, "Well, then you will go in November 99. So that was my first trip.
Really?
I went in for 2 weeks, November. I got to observe the time of their independence. They have two independence days, the 1918 and the 1991 dates. Uh-huh. And I lectured on pre-exilic prophets.
When was your introduction, Dr. Van?
Well, I wanted to just add a word here because Mark was the first choice. When he indicated he couldn't go, Dr. Van Groningen prevailed upon me, and I believe it was January of 1999 that I went for the first time.
So this is a difference of a few months between the two of you, or not so
I was
much?
There in November 99.
Oh, no, November 99.
Were you there earlier before me?
In January. It was not a pleasant time of the year to go to Riga, Latvia, I must say. And the facilities they rented, as I recall, were something called the Technical University, which is near the old city. And one of the churches at that time was worshiping there. Well, it was the church pastored by Alvis. And
Reformed
they also
Bible.
Had rooms rented for the evening class. Mm-hmm. And when I went, I taught a course in sort of introduction to theology, theological foundations, doctrine of scripture, and things like that.
Who were the – at this time, back in 99, who were the students? And generally, what was the theological education level? Who are you teaching?
Oh, that was quite an audience. Remember, we're now 8 years after the breakup of the Soviet Union. And one does not undo mentalities that one acquired in a Soviet era. Some of my students, I think of Ungars, was a teenager when the Soviet Union was falling apart. You know, those were very heady days where you had fear of Soviet tanks coming through the city again and roadblocks and the streets torn up to block the advance feared advance of Soviet tanks. So here comes this new school. It was advertised. I had students who were Baptist, Reformed, an occasional Lutheran. And it was not simply people who were interested in the ministry, because we're thinking along North American models. These were people who wanted to know Christianity.
Yeah.
And Protestant Christianity, and see where the Lord would lead. And in those early days, very few of the students that I had back then are still in the Reformed Church. And there's a variety of reasons. Some of them were Baptist and will always be Baptist. Others came thinking, oh, communism failed, but Christianity is the answer. But they're looking for instant answers. Instant answers. So if we've
come... Or governmental answers? Or well, maybe?
Whatever. Yeah. Who knows what Christianity will bring? And so in the early years, the churches were packed. But then when there's no miraculous turnaround and the millennium doesn't suddenly descend upon Riga Latvia, then people start to drift away. So the churches had to undergo a bit of a filtering process. And so I had a variety of students, variety of translators, Kaspar Serlinch, who is now working in England. I don't know, 15, 20 students. No, that sounds a little high. 10
they're
to 15.
They're from a variety of
church backgrounds.
Church backgrounds.
Right. But most of them were trying out the church, the Reformed faith, and here is this seminary, and you pay a minimal amount of fee to sit in class, and many of them could understand the lectures in English. Some of them made use of the translators.
I see.
Translation would be done in class for 3 hours every evening simultaneously, which is very hard work.
Oh.
They would wear little transistor earpieces, and the translator would sit in the back, and you speak
kinda
slowly.
Kind of like the United Nations, I guess.
Yes. You don't speak too rapidly, and you do numbers very carefully because they required extra time for that, but you watch, and the translator is speaking into a mic quietly, but they're hearing the lecture in Latvian. I've also had it where I would have a Russian translator and a Latvian translator. Yeah.
It was on your right hand and your left?
Well, in the back, because you don't want that to be too disturbed.
This is a question out of left field. Does anyone have any difficulty, even people who understand English, understanding your particular dialect or accent, either of you? I mean, not that I believe any of us have an unusually sounding English accent, but I didn't think so. That hasn't been a barrier to people.
Here's where you see the advantage of a European context. The pastor's daughter, Gabriela Sauka, I don't know if you ever met her, but when I first met her, she was 17 years old, spoke English without accent.
Wow.
I asked her, how did you learn English so well? She said, well, we start learning it in first grade.
Oh, yeah.
And I watched American cartoons.
Oh, it's the cartoons.
I was just glad she wasn't watching Daffy Duck or Bugs Bunny Elmer Fudd.
Oh,
yeah.
It could be the worst.
But clear English.
You've spoken about the church and the strange providence of God bringing about a Reformed church in Latvia. Is this church enduring? And what's the state of its Reformedness today?
Yeah. Great question. I think in many ways, the presence of Baltic Reformed Theological Seminary has contributed to the Reformed character of the churches there. Many of the people who have no intention to be a pastor, but they may be lay leaders, Bible study leaders, elders, that kind of thing, will take classes. Baltic Reformed Seminary has three different programs. There's one which they call their pastoral track. That's to prepare pastors. And a Bible school track where they train leaders.
Mm-hmm.
The churches are very small. There are two principal congregations. Reformed Bible Church is pastored by Reverend Sauka. Then there's the Reformed Church that is pastored by Reverend Ungars Gulbis. Mm-hmm. And that was started in the late 90s as the youth group of Pastor Sauka Church decided to plant, pull out and then plant a church.
Really?
And they started with university students. And I remember visiting there once in 1999. I was clearly the oldest person there. Mm-hmm. There was no one over 30. Well, it was young people. But they are still there to this day, still pastored by Pastor Sauka. And very small. There's a third. And over the years, there's been some church plants that have not done too well. There's a very small Russian language congregation, I'm told, but they've lost contact with it for all practical purposes. But there's a new church plant on the west side of the Daugava River, because Riga is more or less divided by a major river, the Daugava. Yeah. But on the west side, a man by the name of Martin Martinsson trained at the seminary in Riga, mm-hmm. but also trained for 2 years in church planting in London at St. Helens Anglican Church, which is a very evangelical, gospel-preaching mm-hmm. Anglican church. He's come back, and he and his wife are working very hard to plant a congregation on the west side of Riga. So the total number of Reformed believers in Riga area, it's maybe 120.
Wow. Yeah.
But there's another group, younger people again, 20-something people in the eastern part of the country. It's about a two-hour drive that have found the Reformed faith and found out that there's a Reformed seminary in Riga and are looking to Riga for some leadership there. And so they're cropping up as well. Mm-hmm. So the Reformed churches in Riga are small, but yeah, you will hear the Reformed faith preached every Sunday. They are on national radio.
Oh,
their
wow.
services are broadcast or recorded and then broadcast mm-hmm. yeah. every Sunday.
Are they in ecumenical fellowship with other organizations, other churches around the world?
Yeah, since they sort of created themselves, so to speak. They have had contact with the Evangelical Reformed Church of Lithuania. Uh-huh. Now, that was a church that never closed its doors, really, in the Soviet era. Much larger church. Hmm. The Reformed faith came to Lithuania in the 1540s already, before the Netherlands. Many of the lower nobility of Poland and Lithuania became Calvinists, contributed richly to the educational standards of the country. You can go to some Lithuanian villages, and the Reformed church building and the Roman Catholic building are the same size.
Really?
Yes. However, the Counter-Reformation came along and uh-huh. pushed the Reformed back into a corner. In the Soviet era, the Reformed could not have their own seminary, so all their theological students had to be educated in the state theology faculty, which means liberal Barthian at best.
Mm-hmm.
But that has now created a whole generation of clergy in the Lithuanian context that are very, very weak. It's caused some real ecclesiastical troubles. Plus, this is true in many of those former communist countries. Okay, communism leaves. The Soviet Union collapses. And now you have to deal with pastors who were probably KGB agents.
The pastors?
Some were.
Yeah. Wow.
To survive, this is how one of the pastors, Pastor Sauka, described it in the Soviet era. When you become 14 years old, you're going into high school, you are requested, summoned to the KGB headquarters in town. And they play the nice cop with you. We're not asking you to spy on anyone. No, but if you see something or if you hear something, you think that we should know.
That's how you're a good citizen.
Let us know.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Have a good day.
Mm.
Now, if you know that all of your classmates have been summoned to the same interview, whom do you trust?
Mm.
And the same would be, of course, with leaders, church leaders who didn't – I mean, you knew your boundaries. You knew your boundaries. And now, in the post-season, communist season, how do you handle those pastors or church leaders who were, and everyone knew it, were in the pocket of the KGB. Do you let them now run the church? Do you clean house? If so, how? On what basis? Do you forgive and forget?
Wow.
That has caused, within the Lithuanian context, a great deal of struggle.
This is almost like a odd kind of analogy to the Donatist situation.
I know, exactly. If you handed over the Bible to that ignorant Roman soldier and then said, well, you know, I didn't really mean it.
Yeah.
In time of persecution, you know, I'm just trying to save a strategic pullback. Are you a valid clergyman? Mm-hmm. Are your sermons and sacraments valid? Yeah, it's a parallel with the whole Donatist controversy. Now, but also, you must remember, the whole European context, and the Baltics are no exception, face the tsunami of postmodernism. Mm. Church life that is formalistic. Very few Latvians attend a worship service on a Sunday.
Is it a very secular culture, would you say?
Either of you? Yes, but they still observe Easter Monday.
Yeah.
The Ascension Day is a holiday. Good Friday will be a holiday, and you don't give that up.
Yeah.
That's part of our Christian heritage. And yet paganism is right below the surface.
Mm-hmm.
If you come there in the third week of June, I'll take you to some of the pagan celebrations that are very open.
Have you seen any of these, Dr. Venema?
No, colleague Mark has been on several occasions, a number of years in Latvia during the summer, at least during the first half of the summer. Mm-hmm. My occasions to go, I think I've been there six times, have always been either in the winter or in early fall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I've not been there in the summer period, and I haven't attended some of these more interesting.
Mm.
One of them happens on the longest day in terms of the sunshine of the year.
Yeah, the first day of summer, of course, is third week in June 21 usually.
Yeah, right.
But the Feast of St. John the Baptist is June 24.
Oh.
In the Christian calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And every day of the calendar year, every day has a person's name.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And John is Janji, and the day before that is Ligua, which is a woman's name.
Mm.
And so it's a two-day celebration, which the government tourist literature openly describes as a pagan festival. But the country shuts down for 2 days, and you go to your countryside residence, or you visit friends in the countryside. You stay up all night because the light in the sky is there for a long time. At 11 p.m., the street lights are not on yet. It's too light. At midnight, there's still a light blue dome in the north.
Is it that far north? I mean, the
it's
latitude
the equivalent was of northern Ontario, northern Alberta.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they build huge bonfires. They eat food. They drink beverages of adult nature. They have a special cheese that is made in the form of a circle to mm-hmm. represent the sun.
Oh.
And if you eat it, you get a blessing.
Oh. You should bring some back for us. Just kidding.
I don't know if American customs will allow that, but I can bring back black
cheese,
bread.
Cheese is, is definitely okay? Not permitted.
Probably not permitted. And then after imbibing enough alcohol, they start jumping over the bonfires.
Oh. It's one of those.
They sing, yeah. And it's nothing more than an old fertility festival.
Seeing the ecclesiastical, the church calendar, though, does some people try to co-opt it? At least it's a pagan festival, but it gets co-opted in some formal setting.
The Reformed churches know that they're not going to go along with this paganism.
Yeah.
But if they do nothing,
their
young people and their children will be invited to their friends' celebrations.
I see.
And so they will try to co-opt that. I've been the speaker four times at the church camp that meets during this time.
Yeah.
Now, we have a good banquet. There's lots of good food. There's games for the kids. There's talks and lectures and some breakout sessions. And it's a great time. And so and it's very evangelistic.
Mm-hmm.
Invite your unbelieving or agnostic neighbors and friends to come to this church camp to fellowship with the people of God.
That's good. That's an interesting window into church life. In your years of visiting Latvia, how would you characterize the ministry and worship of the church more generally? I mean, have you learned anything or have really been affected by perhaps some cultural differences among the Christians there?
Yeah, the Reformed have no memory of what Reformed life was like in the 30s and 40s, okay? So it's what they learn from others, and they pick up a lot of ideas from their evangelical neighbors. The Reformed churches have no songbooks, so everything is projected on a screen. A lot of the familiar hymns to us, you know, some of the Getty, Townsend.
Really?
Yeah, that's translated into Latvian. The melodies you'll recognize.
Sure.
But they also write their own music.
Hmm.
They're very talented musically. They love to sing.
Are there some ethnic instruments they use, or is it typically
not in worship,
Western
no.
stuff? Okay.
Pianos,
yeah.
Flute, guitar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So their songs are what you might say are some of the better evangelical hymns
mm-hmm.
today.
Yeah.
Their liturgy is pretty standard yeah. Protestant, Reformed. Both churches have weekly communion.
Mm.
Yeah, they celebrate it slightly differently, but wine and bread celebrated together. The children are always dismissed with a blessing for their own Sunday school period.
I see.
Yeah.
Certainly the ministry of the word is central.
Yeah.
Is a significant, the largest element, you might say, in the service. And the elements of prayer, confession, mm-hmm. offering, mm-hmm. call to worship,
mm-hmm.
Welcome and dismissal. Mm-hmm. It has a bit of an evangelical and eclectic quality to it, but it would be recognizable.
Sure.
Certainly mm-hmm. the importance of the word preached and the mm-hmm. sacrament. Is, mm-hmm. is very much the prominent feature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a confession of the Apostolic Creed every Sunday.
Oh, good.
At a certain point in their prayer, they say the Lord's Prayer together. So there are things that would, you know, a Reformed believer from North America would recognize. I'm in a church that has conscious ties to the church of all ages,
uh-huh.
the church more widely. You asked the question earlier about ecumenical, the ties, mm-hmm. connections. The Latvian Reformed Church and the Lithuanian Reformed Church are in sister relationship to one another. In fact, two of the Latvian church leaders, Reverend Sauka and Mr. Artis Salmiņš, who's the head of the seminary, mm-hmm. are ordained pastors in the Lithuanian Reformed Church.
Okay.
Just to provide some kind of, you know, substance to the leadership mm-hmm. of that church.
Mm-hmm.
The Latvian Reformed churches are in a kind of sister church relationship with Oak Glen United Reformed Church in Lansing, Illinois.
No kidding.
And only in this past synod, the United Reformed Church Synod declared, I think, both churches to be churches within a status of fellowship, given the fact that they are churches overseas.
Yeah.
Sort of a sister church, but overseas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be curious to hear more about that down the road. I'm a little bit familiar with the way we categorize ecumenical relations in the OPC, but I'm sure it's a very similar thing. That's encouraging. Now, I know one of our sister churches, the OPC, you know, considering the PCA, has been involved somewhat in Latvia, and MTW has a presence over there. Are they involved mm-hmm. with the Baltic Reformed Seminary or the churches at all?
With the churches, yes. Mm-hmm. I think it was around the year 2008 that the first ordained missionary couple went to work in Riga. There had been some mission teams from time to time before 08, but Reverend and Mrs. Carl Chaplin went to work there and helped out the Reformed churches there very much, especially giving assistance to the Lithuanian.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great shortage of pastors in the Lithuanian context, and so mm-hmm. I think Reverend Chaplin, Carl Chaplin, would go down to Lithuania virtually every Sunday to preach in a variety of churches there. He and his wife came back to the United States about 3 years ago. But for the last 5 years, I think, a lay couple, Mr. and Mrs. Robert Smith, Robert and Jean Smith, have been working and helping out the churches. And they've been particularly helping out the Riga Reformed Bible Church. But with this new church plant on the other side of the river, they're helping out there.
Oh, good. And, you know, I'm looking even at the website now for MTW, and there are ways to follow up and read. I'll put a link to this in the episode description, but just for the listener, quick, mtw.org/team/Europe/Riga-Latvia. And you can get right there and read about some of the work, watch some videos even, but definitely learn how to pray and consider supporting their work. You know, in your years of supporting the church and being involved, have you noticed things change over time? Certainly you've grown and developed as a person and as a believer, been strengthened in your faith. But how would you characterize, you know, now looking at about 17 years of involvement, how have things changed or developed, or at least your assessment, your view of Latvia developed over the years?
With regard to the churches, yeah, churches go through stages as human beings go through stages. And I think it was one of the American missionaries who described what he observed. In those early years, everyone is kind of flush with excitement. And when you have a church of 20-somethings, that has its own kind of character to it.
People jumping over bonfires and stuff.
Well, no, not during church.
Metaphorically speaking.
Right. But some of those couples who were young couples back then are still in the church.
Yeah.
But now they have kids. They have children. And so, yeah, suddenly you have a nursery. And just as married couples go from, you know, the excitement of their early years to now we have children and things change, that kind of settled church life has now come upon them in many ways. But that can be good. But it can also be bad in the sense that the early evangelical fervor cools. And this evangelistic interest in getting the word out there and, should we say, being more active and proactive in pursuing neighbors and fellow workers and neighborhoods for the Lord Jesus Christ, that tends to cool off as you now settle into, well, we have these Bible studies going and we have worship services, of course, and, you know, the church camps and Sunday school, and we just maintain them. So they're a little more structured in terms of they've found their way. They've heard us teach on ecclesiology over the years, I think I taught the first ecclesiology course in the early, like 2002, and, you know, pretty standard doctrine of what the church is. Here's what church leaders are, you know, a Presbyterian Reformed understanding of a multiplicity of elders. This was all new to them.
Oh, yeah.
Very new.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the presence now of Martin Martinsson, who has come back from London, involved in a church plant, I think will help a lot to sort of revive that interest that, yeah, we face this tsunami of secularism and indifference. But Christ is King. The gospel is true. The word of God is the light. And we just need to keep getting it out there. And, you know, I think of how some of the church plant work goes on. You push your children through the park. You strike up conversations with other young mothers pushing carriages through the park. And you say, would you like to come to a Bible study? Yeah, why not? So suddenly you have a young mother's Bible study club. And that becomes the place where potential church members are also gleaned. And that's what's been going on in the church plant as well. Interestingly, the Reformed churches have attracted over the years some very interesting people. I would call him the poet laureate of Latvia, is a member of the Reformed Church.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if you ever met him, Janis Rolkompins. Yeah.
Oh, can you speak Latvian after all these years? I'm not asking you to do it now. I'd be doing it.
Both of us can do greetings.
Oh, you can do greetings.
Mark would do much better in that area than I would, I can assure you.
Es mīlu Latviju. I love Latvia.
Well, there. We'll put that at maybe at the beginning of the intro. We'll have some Latvian listeners. I don't know.
It's a very difficult language.
I assume. Is it extra difficult for an English speaker?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are three letters that they don't have.
J or?
I think
T-H?
Q, so? X, and Y.
Mm.
I don't think they have those letters. They have some sounds mm-hmm. that we don't have.
Sure.
A lot of their vowels have all kinds of diacritical marks over them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's highly inflected.
No.
When I told my Greek students, the Greek noun, you know, in terms of form, has five cases. And they said, is that all? Their nouns have seven cases. So it's very difficult. They took to Greek quite easily.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. Yeah. It would definitely be a challenge, but it's encouraging to know also that there are translators and other people that are helping. And I imagine with the, as you've alluded to, with the involvement now with the European Union and just the European countries in general, that there's somewhat of a lingua franca, or at least some sort of, you know, ability to communicate one with another.
English.
Yeah. And us as me at least as Americans, you know, we just assume that that's all we need to know in life. It's unfortunate, but it tends to be that way. How can our listeners perhaps learn more or be an encouragement to the church in Latvia and also to Baltic Reform Seminary? What are some ways that they might be able to follow up?
We really appreciate the prayers and the interests of Christians around the world. We really do. That's very important because, as I said, they face a mountain of materialism, secularism, indifference. That's the culture. Pagan notions that are still out there. So pray that God will open doors and soften hearts and make that there be no obstruction, especially in Lithuania, where the overwhelming Roman Catholic presence doesn't always make a Reformed voice welcome. Mm. Politically lurking in the background is tensions with Russia. So prayer is very important. Sending teachers from time to time. Pastors who would love to come and teach a pastorally oriented course in the Bible school section of the seminary is very, very welcome.
Mm.
My own pastor, Reverend John Vermeer, went a number of years ago in the fall, and he gave lectures on Mormonism and lectures on Jehovah's Witness. Those were very well attended. They widely advertised them, and many people from other congregations came to hear that, because I can assure you, the Mormons are there in strength. I've met American Mormon missionaries there. 18 Mormon missionaries are working the city. The Hare Krishnas have their center just right around the corner from the hotel that where I stay. So people who can come and train the laity, pastors who can come and train the laity, is very, very, very welcome. They love to have that. It builds ties with the Western churches as well. And your gifts, financial gifts to IDEM, International Theological Education Ministries, is the umbrella organization under which I and Dr. Venema go. I'm on the board of IDEM.
Are you really?
And we meet twice a year, because the interest of IDEM historically was to bring theological training to those churches of the former Soviet Union and the Soviet bloc.
Mm-hmm.
Countries that were once under communist rule and did not have the benefit of full-blown, unhindered Reformed teaching.
Mm-hmm.
So IDEM, it's headquartered in St. Louis, is the umbrella organization that sends out teachers and helps to sponsor them and so forth.
Oh.
So your financial gifts to IDEM are very, very welcome.
Well, I'll definitely include links and information in the episode description so that our listeners can follow up. But I'm greatly encouraged by hearing about this ministry and hearing about the brothers and sisters in Latvia and Lithuania and Estonia as well. It's an encouraging thing. It helps us kind of to get out of our ethnocentric and geocentric conceptions of the church and realize, you know, there is a universal church that spans mm-hmm. not just time, mm-hmm. but also space and geography.
And let me just say mm-hmm. one thing. Two of the pastors, Alvis and Ungars, visited the United States mm-hmm. in this area in November of last year. And we tried to expose them to as much of the church life as possible. And they had this interesting observation. Why don't your elders do more teaching?
Mm.
Our elders teach all the time.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, many of their elders have been trained at Baltic Reform Seminary, which many of our elders here have not had. But they were surprised that, why don't your elders teach more? That's what they're supposed to do.
Well, interesting. That's an important to get a perspective on our own practice, too, from the outside. It doesn't certainly ought not go one way, and we can learn much from the churches in Latvia. I encourage people to visit all the links I'll put in the episode description that they can follow up. And, of course, you can find out more information about Mid-America Reformed Seminary at midamerica.edu. Learn more about this fine institution and follow up with Mr. Vanderhart and Dr. Venema and the classes that they teach and the different events that they might participate in. You can also find a calendar of events or the seminary and ways to get in touch with the ministry here and ways for you to participate. You can visit us online at reformedforum.org, where you'll find information about our organization as well as all of our programs. You can subscribe to them and download them to your heart's content. We want to thank everybody for listening, and we hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.